For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Vaping remains a controversial subject in medical circles. Some argue it is safer than cigarette smoking and is therefore a legitimate tool for smoking cessation. Others argue that inhaling any chemicals into the human lung is a recipe for long-term harms. The evidence base is in its infancy and often contradictory. An outbreak of e-cigarette or vaping product use associated lung injury in the US last year reignited that debate. Dr. Ellie Dabscheck, a respiratory and sleep physician at Alfred Health and Monash University, is a co-author of A Perspective on EVALI, published by the MJA. Ellie is my guest today.
It seems like a very long time ago, but it was about October 2019. I was fortunate enough to be at a big American respiratory conference.
Cool.
In New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And they were in the midst of this emerging health crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of really interesting sort of late-breaking key sessions.
Yes.
Where they described this phenomenon that we have not seen this in Australia, I should hasten to add. And they had three or four guys up there who were really leading the nation in trying to get to the bottom of what was going on. And what they were reporting was a huge number of young people being admitted to hospital who had recently vaped, who were experiencing a presentation that was unusual in that they'd come in with cough and shortness of breath, as well as vomiting, diarrhea, and nausea, not in all instances, but in many instances. And some of them were ending up really very sick, requiring high amounts of oxygen and, in many cases, intubation and ventilation in the intensive care unit.
What did their lungs look like?
If you didn't know better, you'd wonder about a severe bilateral pneumonia. But it became apparent quite early on that they were not responding to conventional antibiotics.
Mm-hmm. So there was no infection, in other words?
No infection. So all the tests to look for infection were consistently negative. All other tests looking for unusual inflammatory conditions, consistently negative. And around the time I was over there, they'd realized that a course of prednisolone or corticosteroids led to improvement in most people. At that point, I'll come back to the etiology in a moment, but at that point it was unknown, the cause, and the numbers were continuing to escalate, and it eventually spread across almost the whole of the United States. All said and done, they admitted almost 3,000 young people with this condition. Average age was in the 30s, and last count, I believe 68 people died. They're, you know, otherwise well, young, and there's a clear cause, a preventable cause, I should say.
Was it immediately obvious that what these people had in common was vaping?
Look, it emerged slowly before it accelerated, and it took a month or two for it to be fully appreciated, and then it took further time for the culprit to be described.
Mm-hmm.
First hint was a very large proportion had volunteered that they were vaping THC products. THC oil, I think, was the main culprit.
Right.
And it was 80%+ that volunteered that information. And given that it's still not legal in several states in America, it's probably an underestimation. And the next step was determining, well, it's probably not the THC itself, it's some sort of additive, because there's all sorts of things that go into the mix, apparently, preservatives, additives, thickeners, things that make it easier to vape, as in to turn it into a gas rather than a liquid, exactly.
Yep.
And it ended up being a preservative that hadn't been used previously called vitamin E acetate. And they'd gone back and looked at previous samples from a year prior, and none of those were tainted with vitamin E acetate. And they looked at results from bronchoscopies of these sick patients, and almost 100% were found to contain vitamin E acetate.
How are things at this point right now? Has vitamin E acetate been taken out of this solution, well, or is it still floating around?
Look, to the best of my knowledge, it was generally, it's hard to be 100%, but the vast majority were thought to be acquired via informal channels, which is code word for your local distributor rather than a marijuana distributor shop. In the olden days, we might have said drug dealer.
Yep.
and I think it's a bad business model.
Yes.
So eventually, word got out and that product seems to have ceased production, and deaths have certainly trickled off, if not stopped.
Mm-hmm. Given the differences in the availability of vaping fluids, both here and in the US, can you see this ever being a problem here?
That's a good question. Anytime you're smoking something that's not regulated and you don't know where it's from or what's in it, anytime you're ingesting any product via any route into your body, there's a chance of contamination, whether that's vaping, inhaled, injected. Products can be tainted. So it's certainly potentially possible.
I mean, do we know how many Australians vape?
I've got better data coming out of the United States. And the data I've got on Australia is actually looking at younger people. I've got some data that's 4 or 5 years old for Australia.
There's the Australian National Drug Strategy Household.
That's right.
That one, yeah.
And 18 through 30, it was 16% using e-cigarettes. And then the age group 12 through 17 was 7%.
Right.
What's more concerning is data that was published a year or two later showing 13% of high school students in Australia are using e-cigarettes. And what is extraordinary is the growth in the United States. There's a lot of data in young people in the United States. The US Surgeon General has issued some very strongly worded reports about a vaping epidemic that's really focused almost exclusively on young people in the United States. So 2011, it was 1.5% of US high school students. And by 2018, that had jumped to almost 21%. So that's an extraordinary growth.
I'm chatting with Dr. Ellie Dabscheck from Alfred Health about vaping-associated lung injury. His co-authored perspective on the subject can be found at mja.com.au. If you're enjoying this podcast, why not check out the other episodes at mja.com.au/podcasts. They're open access and you can download them from the website. Back to our chat. Do we know how many of them are going on to cigarette smoking?
That is a very controversial question. Total number of US high school students who smoke cigarettes over that time period has gone down, but the total number who use a nicotine product overall has significantly increased. The uptake of e-cigarettes in the adult age group, we've got more data from America, that is pretty stable and pretty low. That's around 3.2%. So this problem seems to be one in the sub 30 age group and particularly in high school students in the United States. That's concerning because nicotine is, as everyone knows, highly addictive and can impact on brain development. And brains develop right up until the 20s.
So in Australia, you can't get nicotine-containing vaping liquids, can you, legally?
You could be prescribed nicotine. There is a theoretical possibility of nicotine prescription. I'm not aware if that's begun.
But it's not it's not been approved for therapeutic purposes of smoking cessation.
Yeah. So e-cigarettes are not registered as a medical device or a therapeutic product, not approved by the TGA. They're considered a consumer device. I don't have data. I don't think data exists that describes where Australians are sourcing their nicotine product. Anecdotally, and it's never good to speak in anecdotes, but anecdotally I'm told it's purchased online.
Of course, yeah. Presumably, they can do the same with THC-containing products as well.
Look, I think there's even less data about how one obtains THC products in Australia.
Do we know about any damage vaping might do to the lungs, not including EVALI, for example?
This is an area that is just beginning to be explored. The biggest publication or position paper, it's already a year or two old, that was written by the National Academy of Science, Engineering and Medicine in the United States. And they concluded there was no available data regarding effect. But there's been two papers that have suggested there is some at least short to medium term lung damage with abnormal neutrophil response and potentially changes to oxygen free radicals. But this is still early days. There's nothing to tell me it's safe. And there's nothing to tell me it's the equivalent of smoking a conventional cigarette. You know, e-cigarettes were first, if you can use the word, invented in the 1960s, but they weren't marketed in a conventional sense until probably around 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we didn't see the surge in uptake until around 8 or 9 years ago. So I think this is a relatively new phenomenon. You know, smoking conventional cigarettes, a lot of the damage is seen many decades later. So I think it's early days. I do note that I was watching a TV program the other day called Upload, which is set in the not too distant future.
Mm-hmm. I know it. Yeah.
And one of the characters was dying of, in quotation marks, vaping lung. So although not in any way medical, the concept of the potential dangers of vaping is certainly out there in the community. I didn't sort of come to this topic as someone who had a burning passion in the smoking cessation space. I came to this topic because once I got back from that conference where I heard about this problem, it became mm-hmm. obvious to me that no one in Australia had heard of it. And so our intention in writing this article was just to bring people's medical people as well as the general community's attention to what had happened with the vaping-associated lung injury in the United States last year. That's our primary goal.
Mm-hmm. Given that it's not regulated here, what would you like to see happen to stop the potential of this kind of injury happening?
The thing I really want to focus on, when you talk about smoking, we know how bad cigarette smoking is, and I think that's where the energy needs to be focused. You know, there are interventions that are evidence-based, entirely safe, and effective in helping people stop smoking. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we need to be focusing our money, our time, and our effort. Appropriate behavioural support, appropriate use of approved evidence-based medication. I think that should be number one and number two.
Yes.
It's easy to be distracted by other issues, but I think that should be our absolute focus. It's hard to say how to make things perfect because we just don't know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know about optimal delivery. We don't know about dosage. We don't know about safety. So it's hard to come down with a definitive statement.
But some more research would be really good, yeah?
Research would be excellent. Long-term follow-up is desperately needed, and that will come. There's a lot of questions that we can't answer. There are countries that have used with e-cigarettes that have been more widely available, and there's some emerging sort of cohort data from the United Kingdom. And despite the overall rise in e-cigarette use over a decade, the number of conventional cigarette smokers hasn't really changed. That's not trial, that's, population level data.
Thanks, Ali. Really appreciate
it. Thanks for chatting.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.